Good morning, everyone. Just a couple of quick things before we get started. I just want to express my appreciation to everyone for making time in your calendar for the special CHESLA meeting, and also give a quick shout out to our newest board member, Estela Lopez. Hello, Estela. For those of you that don't know, Estela was, fair to say, a longtime member of CHIFA, Estela, for a number of years. And has a very impressive background in higher education, moved out of state for a short time and is back. And as soon as we heard she was back, we wanted to nab her pretty quickly for the CHESLA board. And Estela's nomination was approved last month at the CHIFA board. So welcome, Estela, to CHESLA.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Glad to, I'm honored to be joining this board.
So, as is our custom or requirement for remote meetings, please bear with me as I read our opening script. In accordance with state law regarding public meetings held via electronic equipment, this meeting will be recorded and the recording will be posted on the authority's website. We need to start with a roll call of board members. My name is Peter Lisi. Obviously, I'm present. Benita Brown Eyes?
Here.
Thank you. Marty Budd.
Here.
Thank you. Andrew Foster.
Present.
Thank you. Michael Izzati. Not present. Carrie Kelly. No. Stella Lopez.
Here.
Julie Savino.
Present.
Thank you. And Laura Baker.
Here.
Thank you. And Jeanette Weldon.
I'm here.
Great, thank you all. Individuals are asked to state their name and title, if applicable, before speaking during the meeting, and votes will be taken by roll call, unless the vote is unanimous. And lastly, in the event the meeting is interrupted due to technical difficulties, members and staff will receive a text or an email advising whether, number one, the meeting is adjourned or canceled, or number two, the time the meeting will resume. So with that, as our preamble, I would call the meeting to order. And again, thank you all for making time on your calendar for our special meeting. First item of business is a review and hopefully approval of the minutes from our March 18th meeting. And I'm hoping that folks spent a few minutes with them. Is there a motion to adopt the minutes as presented? Anyone?
Andrew, so moved.
Thank you, Andrew. Is there a second?
Laura, I second.
I think I heard Laura second it, so thank you. So it's been moved to second.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to abstain. I was not at the meeting.
Yep, thank you. So before the vote, are there any corrections or comments on the minutes as presented? Any edits that are needed? Any corrections? All right, hearing none, the motion's been made and seconded to adopt the minutes as presented. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? And we have one abstention. Any other abstention? And Estela. So Estela Lopez and Marty Budd abstentions. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Minutes are approved. Next item of business, and I think probably our primary reason for our special meeting, is a discussion and hopefully approval of the authorizing resolution for the 2024 bonds. Jeanette, would you like to do a quick overview and then we'll turn it over to Tim for transaction overview?
Yeah, so the authorizing resolution in your package calls for a not to exceed bond amount of $31 million. The transaction is scheduled to price on May 8th, which is the same day that the bus loan rate will be set, and to close on May 30th. And I did want to ask, before we go to Tim, I wanted to ask Josh just to comment on the bond size, since it's a little bit higher than what we've had in some past years.
Yeah, thanks, Jeanette. So if the board will recall, typically we take a five-year average for disbursement projections. Exciting news that I don't know if we relayed it to the board, but we are now on UConn's preferred lender list. I'm not sure if we've ever been on UConn's preferred lender list, but it's been a long time coming. So I took the 5-year disbursement average, and we grossed up the monthly disbursements by 10% to incorporate the UConn Preferred Lender List, but also taking into consideration some of the issues in the industry surrounding the FAFSA and FAFSA completions.
Josh, this is Peter. Great news on the UConn being on the preferred lender list. I'm just kind of curious how that came about. Diligence, how did it come about? It's great news.
Yeah, so I think Jeanette and I have had meetings with UConn over the years in terms of how they could update their process to make it more seamless. And I also think it takes into account some of the upgrades or changes we've made to our programs, such as removing the origination fee. And we've also received great feedback about the transition to Campus Door and UAS as the originator and servicer. So I think it's UConn updating their process and some of the changes we've made to our program.
Marty Budd, trustee, just to give you the history. 20 years ago, UConn would not even put us on our list, and we had nobody borrowing from UConn. And it took a lot of lobbying just to get us on our list. And now we're on the preferred lender list. So this is really progress over the last 25 years.
And I will say a lot of it is due to Josh's persistence and follow-up, you know, over the past few years with UConn, because it took a lot to get them to this conclusion. So,
well done to all.
So I think now we'll turn to Tim, who's going to give a transaction overview.
Good morning. For the record, this is Tim Webb, Hilltop Securities Senior Vice President. Once again, we're here in the spring where we're looking to raise money for Chesla, for Josh to do his magic and originate loans. We have, over the last X number of years, issued bonds every spring on or about the same date, or priced on or about the same date. The plus loan is reset. As Jeanette mentioned, we're looking to price bonds on May 8th, which is the date of the plus loan reset. Just as a little background, the plus is not necessarily your only competition, but it is something in which we try to always compare ourselves. We like to price at the same time to eliminate some risk there. Today, the 10-year treasury, the plus loan is reset based off of the last 10-year treasury auction in May, plus a spread of 460. Today, if it were to reset, it would be at a 924 as of about 5 minutes ago. Obviously, that the rate on that moves daily, but this is the highest plus rate we've seen in quite a long time. Again, 464 right now. 464 right now plus 460 gives us a 924 potential rate on the plus. We don't know where it will be when we price, but that's kind of an indication of where things stand. As Jeanette mentioned, you can go on to the next.
Excuse me, could you, maybe Josh or somebody, what is our current loan rate to students?
Yeah.
The current loan rate is 6.35% fixed.
Good. Thank you. Sorry.
No worries. Again, we're looking at an issue of approximately $28 million. As Jeanette mentioned, we've got a $31 million not to exceed. The funds will be used to fund a $27 million origination fund, pay certain costs of issuance, and also fund the SCARF. This will be the sixth issuance out of the 2019 indenture. I'll remind you that back in 22, we refunded all of the 1990 bonds. So there's no longer a 1990 indenture. We only have the single indenture out of 2019. And Chesla will use those funds to originate loans to borrowers with a Connecticut nexus. Again, those are to borrowers who are from the state of Connecticut or borrowers outside the state of Connecticut that are attending schools in the state. In order to keep the rate as attractive as possible, CHESLA has decided that they will do an issuer contribution of cash of $750,000, or I should say not to exceed $750,000, and that they're also going to contribute approximately $1 million worth of loans that are refi loans. Those are, again, not to exceed numbers, and the purpose of those deposits to this transaction is to be able to buy down the rate. Now, with regard to the rate, last year we issued bonds. If we were to compare the rate on the bonds last year to where they were, if we were to go to market last Thursday, we would be about 30 to 35 basis points higher in yield now than we were last year. We don't know where that's going to be when we come to market on May 8th, but by providing that $750,000 and the $1 million of refi loans, it does two things. It helps buy down the rate, and it also helps us with liquidity issues. So it allows us to move some of the serial bonds up earlier in the structure, thereby reducing your cost of funds. If we could go to the next slide, please. Here's our sources and uses. So we've got about $27.6 million worth of bonds that are being issued. Based on the market today, we're looking at about $800,000 in premiums. That's a combination of premiums on the non-callable serial bonds and a discount on the term bond. There's our contribution of $750,000. We reallocate some of the SCARF funds. As you know, we pay down bonds periodically on the 19 through 23 issues. And when bonds get paid down, we don't need quite as much SCARF available per that particular series. So when we come to structure a new transaction, we utilize some of those overages in the other SCARFs to apply to the new bonds. So we're going to utilize about 1.7 million of SCARF that's already there in the other issues and apply it to 24. And then we have the contribution of the refi loans. That goes to fund the full SCARF, pay cost of issuance, and provide 27 million of funds for Josh to originate loans. Any questions? Next slide, please. So this is the preliminary structure. We'll have serial bonds that are non-callable from 26 through 33. And then we'll have a term bond out to 2040 with sinking fund, mandatory sinking fund retirements 34 through 40. Now, this term bond will absorb some of the prepayments to the extent that they're higher than what we anticipated. So we are able to take out those longer bonds through excess revenue calls. Next slide, please. This will take us to the cash flows. So in your board packet, you could go to page 330, which is the sources and uses. And this goes over what I've just discussed. It shows the non-callable serial bonds, 14.9 or almost 15 million of bonds as non-callable serial bonds, and then a term bond of $12,600,000. The combination of the premium and the discount shows a premium of $809,000, which gives us total proceeds of approximately $28.5 million. We use the issuer contribution, the refi loans, and then the reallocation of the SCARF for total proceeds of approximately $32 million. Provides us with acquisition funds of $27 million for Josh, a SCARF funding completely of $3.3 million. There's our loans, our refis, and then cost of issuance. Next page, please. And let's go down a little bit further. This is the cash flow report. These are very detailed reports. They're long, sometimes difficult to understand, but if you could keep going down to page, I think it's 334. And in the right-hand column under surplus external distributions, $4,952,000. Under the expected case, we would look to have those external distributions, or that would be the residual of the portfolio after the 24 bonds are paid in full. So over the life of the cash flow, we're putting in approximately $1.75 million worth of cash in the combination of actual cash and loans. And then we would receive about 4.952 of residual on the portfolio. All of this.
Excuse me, Marty Budd, trustee. So there's roughly $4 million of equity. Is that what you're saying?
It would generate almost $5 million of equity on the expected case after having put in approximately 1.75, correct?
Thank you very much.
And those are future value dollars. That's not present value dollars.
Right,
future
right,
value
right.
dollars. And this is presuming that we retain the 6.35 interest rate. That would probably, if we do use the 6.35 interest rate, this would be the largest spread differential between the plus and Chesla's rate. It would almost be 300 basis points, significant benefit. Next page, please. Or actually, let's go to, I'm sorry, I have to see which page we're going to. We're going to go to 353, please. So Chesla issues its bonds backed by the SCARF. This is different than the majority of the, well, all the issuers out there in the student loan space. It's not a structured transaction. It's based solely on the credit of the state. And what's important with regard to these reports, which begin on 351 and go through 353, and this is the ending of the report, there are no draws on the SCARF. We run both a base case, which presumes a 6% default rate. We run another case, which is our stress case, which is at 12% default rate. And then we also ran an 18% default rate, or three times the expected case. In each one of these cases, we have no failures. We have no draws on the SCARF.
Tim, it's Bettina. Just wanted to clarify that again. So the highest stress you did was at 18% and there were still no draws?
That's correct. We basically solved for three times. Our base case is 6. Our stress is 12. Josh sees a net default rate of somewhere around 2 or slightly under 2, maybe right at 2%. So we're stressing it pretty severely, and we've never approached those cases. When you reviewed the cash flows last year, Bettina, we did the same thing. We did a 6%, a 12%, and then we did a failure cash flow, which was somewhere north of 18. The difference in this year is that we solved debt service, issuer contributions to come up with an 18% structured on default.
I see in my notes from last year, actually, my notes say that you it wasn't until you hit 25% that there was some defaults. Is that the same ballpark again this year?
Yeah, it was just the way in which we ran the cash flows this year versus last year. We were trying to optimize this year the structure. You could move some bonds around and come up with a higher default rate. What you generally run into, Bettina, is a liquidity issue early on in the structure. So if you were to push bonds out further into the structure, which increases the cost of Chesla, you could possibly go with a much higher default rate.
Okay. And one last question on the default rate. What is the current default rate?
Give me a second.
Josh, you know, I'm going to need that and the net of collections rate. Maybe you can just email that to me after this call.
Okay. Yeah, but it's roughly 6% and the gross and 2% net.
Okay. Thanks.
So those are all good questions. I remember we went through those, and Bettina will be providing you not only with these cash flows, which are the standalone cash flows, but probably more importantly from your perspective is the trust cash flows, because you're looking at the SCARF from the entire indenture perspective. And we ran both the base, the stress, and the 18% on the stress as well, on the trust cash flows.
And so, just to jump in here, Bettina, I looked it up. As of March 2024, the gross was 5.77%. with a net default rate of 2.24%. And I can also email that to you as well.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
All right, no problem.
So that is a quick overview of the cash flows. Once again, RBC will be providing the senior manager work on this. They performed all the cash flow analyses with Hilltop reviewing, as well as the authority and bond council. Co-manager will be Blaylock Van. They've been co-manager on the last few transactions. We look forward to a healthy transaction, although the interest rate market has been very volatile. I thought it might be appropriate, should the board members want to hear this, but Jeff Wagner from RBC is queued up to give a brief market overview on issuance of student loan debt.
Go ahead, Jeff. It's yours.
Jeff, I don't know if you're on mute.
Jeff, we can hear you, yeah. Okay, maybe that, is that better?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Much better, without the mute button on. Apologies for that. Okay, I was asking if it was okay for me to jump right in. I'm guessing that's a yes then. Okay,
yes.
Thank you, Tim. That was a great job reviewing the structure. I guess, the headline is that markets have recalibrated their interest rate cut expectations since the CPI print that came out last week was much higher than expected at 3.5%. So, you know, the long and the short of it is that inflation is persistent. We've covered a lot of ground since last year. You know, you may recall early last year, there was a lot of talk about whether or not we were going to have a soft landing or a hard landing. Recession was sort of the theme last year. That isn't really the case anymore. Economic output numbers are very solid. The labor market is very strong. But we find ourselves in a place now, it's a kind of a tricky place where all of those signals point the good things for the economy, except for inflation, which the Fed is very concerned about because it can be very damaging to the long-term health of the economy. At the beginning of this year, there were projections for 7 rate cuts, between 6 and 7 Fed rate cuts. That started to change in February, early March, and people were projecting 3 rate cuts because of the persistence of inflation. And inflation has come way down. I mean, it peaked around 9% mid-summer of 22, and it's come steadily down. But literally, it's been in about the same place since May of last year. So we really haven't moved off of sort of that 3 to 3.5% CPI print year-over-year range for going on close to a year now. After last week's CPI print, everything recalibrated, and now people are making cases for no cuts this year. There's a solid case for no cuts. There's a pretty solid case for maybe 1 cut. And if you look at the Fed fund futures market, there's a 0% chance of a cut in May. I mean, that's off the table. 80% of the market is betting against a cut in June. More than half of the market is betting against a cut in July. And about 35% of the market is betting against a cut in September. So that's a big difference from where we started this year in terms of what the rate cut expectations were. So that's sort of the big picture. If we drill down, well, I guess I should mention, obviously, there's a geopolitical situation that's going on right now that hopefully can be resolved diplomatically. But that's also upsetting markets, too. I mean, the plus rate that Tim mentioned, which is based on a 4.64 10-year T-note, would have been, which was, I think, 9.24, as Tim mentioned, that was projected more like 880 just 2 weeks ago. But 2 weeks ago, the 10-year T-note was 4.20%, and today it's yielding 4.64. So that's a 44 basis point change in just like 2 weeks, 10 and a half trading days, if you count today as a half a day, which is kind of crazy in terms of where markets have gone. The good news for Tesla is that the muni market, which it issues into, has been very strong. And ratios in particular of muni yields to treasury yields have remained very strong. So as treasury yields have gone up, muni yields have gone up in sympathy, but not excessively. So we're right now at a ratio of 10-year MMD to 10-year U.S. Treasury of 59%. That's only eight ratio points, if you will, above the all-time low of 51%. So very strong demand in the muni market. The market has seen inflows into muni fund complexes pretty much consistently all year long. Very solid first quarter inflows that have continued into April. So the demand in the muni market is very solid. You know, there's not a lot of time to go until Tesla prices on May 8th. Of next month. So fingers crossed for a good bond sale. Right as of right now, the cash flows that we're working on that we're sharing with the state treasurer's office have a cost of funds of about 4.15%. So that's based on, I believe, April 9th market rates. So it's probably a little higher if we were going to do it today. But then again, so is the plus loan rate higher than it was projected to be on April 9th. So all in all, very good news. Despite all the market turmoil that we're hearing about, there's a little bit of a flight to safety, flight to quality trade that's on now because of this geopolitical risk. That's why you're seeing treasury yield spike since Friday. The equity markets are down, treasury markets up in yield, lower in price, and muni markets are up modestly in yield, lower in price. So all in all, pretty good news for Tesla as it heads into pricing in a few weeks. So I'll open the floor for any questions.
Thank you, Jeff. Any questions for Jeff?
Peter, I have one more thing I'd like to add. Again, this is Tim Webb, Hilltop Securities Senior Vice President. I know that the board has seen this in the past. There's discussion about the utilization of a surety bond for the SCARF. There is legislation up on the Hill that is hopefully going to get passed this year, but is not at a point where it could be applied to Tesla that would allow Tesla, should it be passed, to do away with a cash-funded SCARF and use a surety bond in lieu thereof. That potentially is a benefit to the transactions in that you take out a lot of cash from the transaction and you replace that with the bond. It should improve the cash flows. That may be something that will occur next year or sometime between now and next year. I'm sure that we would come to the board to discuss that, but I just wanted to keep that on your radar, that that's something that we have not forgotten about and continues to move forward.
Okay. Thank you, Tim. Other questions for Tim or Jeff?
Peter, this is Julie Savino, Vice Chair. I just want to confirm with folks on the interest rate. I think I heard, Tim, you're saying you're going out to try to preserve the current rate that we have right now. Is that what we're looking to be for our bonds at around the 6.35?
That's what we've run the cash flows, Julie, to the extent that the pricing was significantly worse. I think that it'd be incumbent upon us to look at what the new loan rate would be to support the cash flows. Ultimately, we have to have a cash flow that not only meets the requirements of the state treasurer's office, but also shows some growth within the trust to help you preserve the ability to issue bonds in the future. That's what the million of refi loans and the 750 does, is it helps buy that down. But again, you're looking at if the plus were to stay where it were to reset today, and versus a 635, you're looking at 290 basis point spread differential. That's massive compared to any time in the past.
Well, I think I want to confirm that, but I think I also want to confirm to everybody that because this is a family loan and it is with the student, if the student loan rate were to reprice again today, and maybe Jeff or Tim can correct me if I'm wrong, but we're actually looking at a 6.69% for our student rate as well. That's a much higher rate. And I do think in the situation that we are today, with a number of families who would have traditionally wanted to go with that unsubsidized loan for the federal government, understanding the changes and the results we've had from the FAFSA, I think that the 6.35 rate would be very, very favorable to families in the state of Connecticut who may choose to eliminate all borrowing with the federal government as well. So, I think I'm right if I'm using the 4.67 treasury rate with their 2.05 cap. I think that would be very important for us to consider right now. Serve our rate,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to say that just to confirm that's correct, that you're getting the 6.69, 4.64, plus 2.05. I guess the only thing that's worth mentioning about that is, you know, generally we encourage borrowers to take as much of the Stafford loan, whether it's subsidized or unsubsidized, just because there are the potential for other federal benefits.
Correct.
On those loans. But there is a fee, an origination fee. It's not as big as the PLUS loan origination fee, which is 4.25%, but there's also an origination fee on that unsubsidized Stafford. So the 669 is really not 669. It's a bit higher than 669. So there, in theory, there would be a pure economic advantage over the plus over the Stafford loan with a Chesil loan if it stays at 635, with the clear economic advantage, which is, as Tim mentioned, it's kind of unprecedented to just have the wide spread we have with the 635 to the regular plus. It's very unusual to have a private loan outprice the Stafford.
Correct. That's kind of what I was feeling at this point. But with the FAFSA delays and with families actually now deciding to not fill out FAFSA, period, because of its relationship with the IRS and the problems that's creating, I could suspect that there may be a sea change in how families feel with the unsubsidized loans versus the subsidized.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Julie. The other thing that people are aware of right now is that the other spot that people look to generate money for college is through their home equity loans. And home equity loans are significantly higher than where Chesil's would be. So a combination of those two, the high plus, the high Stafford, unavailability of home equity loans at a reasonable price could really generate a lot of volume for Chesil this year.
Agreed. I think we're seeing that in our financial aid offices. I think that, you know, in the counseling of families, it seems to be an option that may be more popular than not, you know, some of the other alternative loans out there. But you're right, we're not going to be the only game in town, because I think all the other states are probably seeing the same thing. And many of the private lenders are going to try to adjust the same way.
This is Andrew, I was going to ask that, Julie, and I know we were talking about the Parent PLUS loan quite a bit, but I suspect that other private lenders are going to probably do similar. And regarding the conversation with the unsubsidized Stafford loan, right? The rate will probably be higher, but the qualification for approval is a lot different, right, from Chesil. So chances are the families who normally rely on that is probably likely to continue if they don't necessarily meet the loan approval requirement for Chesil. Yeah.
That's correct. There's no requirement for a Stafford or an unsub from an economic perspective. You don't have to have a FICO score. You don't have to have income. So yes, there's a significantly different population that would be going for the Stafford or unsub Stafford versus a Chesler loan.
Correct.
Marty Budd, trustee, just in case of disaster in the next week or two, I'd like to know how much more refi loans we have on our balance sheet if things go gaflooey because of the externalities and war and so forth. Could we have an emergency meeting or postpone to increase our contributions? How much refi loans do we still have on the balance sheet after putting the million in?
All right, Marty, I think as of March, we had $8.5 million. So if you put a million in, you'd have $7.5 million of refi on the balance sheet.
So I think our financial advisors and everybody else ought to be aware if there is a sudden externality or some other reason that interest rates really move, we might want to consider postponing and putting more equity into this bond issue.
Well, I
Marty,
think
that's a fair point. Something else I want to keep in mind is Carly and I are currently doing an analysis of the refi program to determine the sustainability of the refi program to turn into a revolving loan fund. Because the $3 million, my understanding is the $3 million transfers from CSOF are not sustainable on an annual basis. So it's kind of a balancing act, right? We want to contribute some refi loans to buy down the rate, but we also want to have enough refi loans on the balance sheet. So hopefully that program can turn into a revolving loan fund and not continue to rely on CSOF.
Right. But I just wanted to raise this as a anchor to windward, if you will. We might just live with the 6.5 student loan rate if everything else is equally disaster in the next 7 or 8 days or right. 10 days. But we ought to all keep that in mind, that we have some powder still.
Yeah. This is Tim Webb again with Hilltop Securities. One of the things that we do, Marty, we do this every year, is after we price, we run the cash flows and we determine what that rate may or may not be. So if we were to price the bonds and then rerun the cash flows, we have a couple of levers in which to pull. One would be to contribute more refi loans. The other would be to adjust the loan rate. So we do get another bite of the apple, as Jeff often says, once we've priced. So sometime around the 9th or 10th, we'll be rerunning those cash flows. And hopefully we'll price somewhere close to where we are right now and we can retain the low rate.
Well, all I wanted to do was to warn Jeanette that May 8th may be a difficult day. There might be decisions to be made, and that we have flexibility.
We do. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Mark. Any other questions or comments? Anything for Tim or for Jeff?
Marty Budd again.
Go ahead, Marty.
I have a question on the authorizing resolution. I don't know if now's the time to bring it up. As usual, there is at the end of paragraph 2 discussion of federally taxable loans. I always try and get that language out. I take it, maybe this is lawyer's point, but I don't see any need for talking about federally taxable loans. It's the end of paragraph 2 on page, starts at bottom of page 12 and top of page 13.
So this is Sandra Dawson at Pullman and Comley. There's absolutely no ulterior motive for putting it in other than just standard language. So if the board wants it struck, it can be struck.
I always would feel better.
Marty, what page is that again that you're referring to?
Page 12 to 13. I'm sorry, Marty.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Andrew.
Oh, I see. Okay.
unless Jeff or Tim or Jeanette thinks that we are going to need to issue taxable, I don't have an issue taking it out.
Okay.
No, I think it.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for a reason.
Yep.
No intention to issue taxable this go round.
Yep. Okay. So that can be struck. Thank you, Marty.
Well, I'll move the resolution. I think we've gone through everything else.
Well, I was just gonna call for a motion. Thank you, Marty. Would someone like to second it?
Bettina, I'll second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to adopt the authorizing resolution for the 2024 series bonds. Is there any further discussion, comments? Any additional questions? Okay, with the reference to the federally taxable basis struck from the resolution, all those in favor of approval, please say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you very much. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Tim, Jeff, Josh, Jeanette, for all your hard work and good discussion by the board. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Motion carries on to the next item of business. We have been put forth an amendment to the scholarship program manual. I believe Denise, you're going to walk us through that.
Yes, thanks, Peter. Kara, if you could display page 421, please. So staff's proposing a few amendments to the scholarship manual regarding applicant eligibility. So on page 421 of your package, the definition of eligible student would be amended to include a reference to a healthcare and manufacturing certificate program, as we thought it would make more sense to add it to the definition of eligible student rather than have it referenced in the application section, excuse me, of the program manual. And the phrase planning to enroll in was also added in reference to both the healthcare and manufacturing certificate program and the Connecticut alternate route to certification program, as applicants may not always be enrolled prior to applying for a scholarship. There's additional amendments on page 422. In section 3A, the first applicant requirement is simplified to read, be an eligible student for the upcoming academic year, since eligible student is already a defined term. And section 3B is amended to include the phrase enrolled in reference to both the healthcare and manufacturing certificate program and the Connecticut alternate route to certification program, as applicants may either be enrolled or planning to enroll in a program prior to applying for a scholarship. And the final amendment is adding the Connecticut alternate route to certification program in section 3B, as a FAFSA submission is not required for that program. And there's a resolution on page 416 of your package to approve these amendments, and happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Denise. Before we get to voting on the resolution, are there any questions for Denise? Questions or comments? All right, I would entertain a motion to adopt the resolution as presented. Would someone like to make a motion?
Move to approve, Estela.
Thank you, Estela. Motion's been made. Is there a second?
I'll second, Julie Savino.
Thank you, Julie. So it's been made. Motion's been made and seconded to adopt the resolution for the scholarship program manual as found in your meeting packet and just described by Denise. Are there further questions or any questions?
I'd like, Marty Budd, trustee.
Go ahead, Marty.
I'd like to say this is a great addition. I think opening the scholarship program to other workforce possibilities is where we should be. I think it came out of our retreat, and I think these changes are all in the right direction.
Yeah, I completely agree. Making it more accessible, I think, is a great principle of ours. So I agree. Anyone else? Questions or comments? All right. It's been moved and seconded to adopt the resolution as presented. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you very much. The motion carries unanimously. The resolution is adopted. Well done, Josh and Denise. Thank you all. Is there any other business to be brought before the board? Anything for the good of the cause?
Marty Budd again.
Yes.
Do we have to in any way approve the supplemental resolution or the draft preliminary official statement, or is that all encompassed in the authorizing resolution, authorizing our officers to do everything? Maybe our bond counsel ought to tell
us. Yeah,
I
would talk to
Sure. This is Sandra Dawson at Pullman and Comley. It's incorporated in each of the paragraphs that mentions the POS and the supplemental resolution. It says that, you know, it's a form of, and then there's another paragraph, I'll have to open it up, that states that you're giving
section three.
It's four. Yeah, that let's see. Oh no, let's see.
Section three references the supplemental.
Yeah, then but then five, I said, I guess is you can they can do everything. Everything's delegated to them. So
good. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bettina.
Yeah, and to that point, I'd request, I need a copy of the revised authorizing resolution sent over, because I'll need that for the treasurer recommendation for the SCARF.
It's on its way.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you both. Anything else? Any other business? Well, again, thank you all for making time for our special meeting. Tim, Jeff Wagner, thank you very much for your work on this. We'll look forward to an update. And our next meeting is June 13th. Hearing no other business, would someone like to move for adjournment?
With so Andrew, so moved.
Thank you, Andrew and Julie. All those in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thank you all very much. We are adjourned. Thank you.